You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 161 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Artistic Sensitivity as a Spiritual Approach to Knowing Life and the World, translated by Rory Bradley. That's 13 lectures. This is Lecture 11, given in Dornach on April 3rd, 1915. Festivals and holidays are occasions when people can collectively contemplate important and significant matters of the soul and of evolution. In that light, it is quite appropriate that on the occasion of these days of sorrow, we are taking up these considerations, which might come to an individual during meditation, or simply arise in the soul, but which these holidays allow us to discuss together. Yesterday I gave some clear indications about the fact that the burial of Christ Jesus on Good Friday and the resurrection on Easter Sunday are symbols of something very important for both human and cosmic evolution. These are the days in which the human soul can actually experience, or at least feel its way, into one of the deepest and most inner aspects of its being. The symbol for the fact that the Christ being, or shall we say the incarnation of the Christ being, remained in a state of death on earth for 3 days, is connected with the deepest depths of the human being. We know this already from other lectures and discussions. And perhaps today, with this group of gathered friends, we can remind ourselves of an important mystery that is connected with this symbol. If you truly have a complete sense of the symbolic significance of Christ's burial, of what it means that he lay in that grave and experienced death, if you immerse yourself in these symbols properly, and if you are fructified by the achievements of spiritual science, then you will really experience something both in your feelings and thoughts that is connected with the deepest secrets of human nature on earth. If we ever finish this building here, there will be a specific place where we will have an image carved out of wood of the victory of the Christ being over Ahriman on the one side and Lucifer on the other. This image will represent the significance of the earthly relationship between Christ, Ahriman, and Lucifer, which was reflected in the movement of the Christ being through the mystery of Golgotha. And now, it might be said that if you really let the significance of Christ's lying in the grave work deeply and truly upon your soul, then a feeling will arise in your soul for the true meaning of Christ's battle against Lucifer and Ahriman. In order to understand this, let us bring up several things before our souls that we already know. Particularly in ancient times, people have alluded to the fact that something like the death and resurrection of a god was prepared and anticipated in the old religions, and that they have gone on to believe that it is possible to conclude that the Christ event was merely a transmutation of something like, shall we say, the death and resurrection of Adonis. But such claims only show that the person who makes them lacks a true understanding of the Christ event. This is because we can see in the nature of the Adonis story and the others like it the being of the natural world, a state of being that recurs every year and is connected with the natural world and that actually belongs to the natural world. The story of Baldur, which we discussed yesterday, is fundamentally connected with the appearances of nature and with the things that human beings in ancient times could observe in them. All pre-Christian religions were at their root religions whose devotional aspect was connected with what human beings who still possessed ancient clairvoyance could perceive in the natural world and its processes. And even today, the Eastern religions really have not moved past this point. Christianity has moved beyond it, for Christianity can be called an historical religion in the fullest sense of the word, a religion through which we arrive at what must be understood in the progress of human history and human evolution on the earth. The very fact of earth history comes about for the first time through the mystery of Golgotha. The essence and true significance of the mystery of Golgotha is that the Christ event, the event at Golgotha, stands at the midpoint of an earth evolution that goes through a period of ascent and then a period of descent. This has been described often. You could also say it the other way round, that it descends and then ascends. Furthermore, the very idea of history itself makes sense only because of the Christ event. Now we must answer a question. What is this historical progression anyway, which results from human actions and runs through the course of Earth evolution like an extension of the natural world? What is, in quotes, history actually? What are the occurrences that are played out in the progress of human deeds, feelings, and thoughts? What is that anyway? When you stand with soul vision honed by spiritual science before the being of Christ Jesus lying in his grave during these days of Easter, then you will truly understand what history is. The meaning of history arises in your soul in that moment. It is that you become aware, if you have sharpened your soul vision through spiritual science, that history here on earth will one day become nature on the planetary body that earth will one day take on as a new incarnation. The history of earth anticipates and prepares the natural world of Jupiter. The historical events of earth are a kind of prophetic proclamation of the natural events of Jupiter. How is that? Here on earth, human life in its physical incarnation progresses in this way. We are planted into physical earthly existence through birth. We undergo an ascending course of physical development into our 30s, and then a declining course of physical development after that. At the beginning of this earthly existence is our physical birth, and at the end of it is our physical death. Or rather, what we call physical death. If a human being on earth does not participate in the powerful and essential inner experiences of the soul, then the middle of earthly existence, in the physical incarnation, I would say somewhere in the mid-30s, passes more or less unnoticed, at least in most cases, given the general level of self-awareness that people exhibit. This will be entirely different once humanity has gone through its time on Jupiter. It will be completely and utterly different. I will not speak today about the completely different way, completely different from the physical birth that occurs on Earth, in which the human being will enter life on Jupiter. I can speak about that at another time. And the human being on Jupiter will also leave behind physical existence in a completely different manner from the physical death on earth. But the midpoint of life, in other words, the equivalent of what we experience in our mid-30s, will become very powerful and significant for the human being on Jupiter. I would put it this way. Something will enter into the life of the human beings who have evolved into an existence on Jupiter. At the midpoint of their existence, they will experience something like a combination of what birth and death are to human beings on earth at the beginning and end of our physical incarnation. In other words, imagine that human beings will experience something in the middle of their incarnation on Jupiter that is roughly equivalent to what would result if you were to mix together birth and death. Now, you must not imagine that you could simply combine these two things just as they manifest themselves as experiences on earth. Rather, birth and death must be brought together through a kind of chemical bonding. If you combine oxygen and hydrogen, something results that is nothing like either the hydrogen or the oxygen, that is, water. At the midpoint of an incarnation on Jupiter, the human being will experience a kind of combination of earthly birth and death, but one that is necessarily different from the kind of combination that one might come up with through an idea-based intellectual mixing of these two occurrences. So you see, existence moves forward step by step. And by the time we get to life on Jupiter, we must imagine that at the midpoint of a human being's life on Jupiter, something like what I have just described enters into existence. As you know, all of human consciousness on Jupiter will be quite different from our consciousness on Earth. To learn about the various stages of human consciousness from life on Saturn to life on Vulcan, you need only read what is written in the Akashic record about them. You will then be able to recall that on Jupiter, a higher form of image vision enters in, an imaginative consciousness that represents a higher level of consciousness than what we experience on Earth. So we will grow into a consciousness that is not as disoriented as Earth consciousness, one that takes up the impressions it receives from the outside world in an entirely different way. Images in the form of imaginations will be generated from these impressions through internal will forces, in the same way that I, capital, as a human on Earth, might perceive something and then sketch it or draw it. This is roughly what consciousness on Jupiter will be like, except that the very act of perception on Jupiter will be entirely different than it is on Earth. There, on Jupiter, the human being will seek out the images, the kinds of things that turn into represented images on Earth. They, too, will form something like paintings, but they will be the internal processing of incoming perceptions and make up the content of the imaginative consciousness. The human being will enter into Jupiter existence in order to obtain this imaginative consciousness. And just as Earth consciousness undergoes a process of development during childhood, so too will this imaginative consciousness undergo a process of development, a process of unfolding. Then, when the middle of a human life on Jupiter arrives, at this midpoint of life on Jupiter, something will enter in during a period of time that we can symbolize as 3 Earth days. That is, the Jupiter consciousness will experience a repetition of Earth consciousness, a short repetition, for it will last for only a few days. So a part of the experience of life on Jupiter will include a brief renewal of Earth consciousness in such a way that the human being in the midst of life on Jupiter will again feel and experience the world as an earthly being. Having gone through a period of time with the imaginative Jupiter consciousness, human beings will experience a period in which they have only Earth consciousness once again, a consciousness that is as unlike Jupiter consciousness as our dream consciousness is to our waking daily consciousness. When human beings step into this period of Jupiter-Earth consciousness, this repetition of Earth consciousness, we will experience a desire to undergo a kind of internal taking stock, a kind of review of everything that we achieved and gained as human beings on Earth, what we achieved and gained in the past. As I said, we will have this Earth consciousness for only a brief period of time during our lives on Jupiter. But during this period of time, we will feel an intense need to look back on our past as human beings. That is why this renewal of Earth consciousness will be there. And when we look back on everything, the question will arise in each of us, what did you actually achieve during your past incarnations? What did you achieve and gain through what you became as a human being on Earth? Each of us will have to ask these questions out of a kind of cosmic necessity. Just as we must eat and sleep here on Earth to survive, so too will it be absolutely necessary, during this brief renewal of earth consciousness, to ask ourselves, what did you achieve by becoming a human being? Why have you become a free and independent person? In that moment, we will witness the sum of our experiences on earth. And in posing this question, in witnessing these experiences, what each of us has achieved and accomplished will step before our soul in a powerful Jupiter dream. But this Jupiter dream will be as real as all of our real perceptions on earth. It will not step before us as a dream image. It will have as much reality as the earthly human being that we see when we look at ourselves now. And then it will happen that a figure will step before us who answers our question clearly. And the being that steps before us as an answer to our question, the being whom we must then face, do you know who this being will be? It will be Lucifer. And Lucifer will say, quote, "See now that in everything you became in the past as a human being, you belong to me," close quote. And you will certainly know that this is Lucifer, just as you recognize another person when he steps before you, and you perceive him now as a human being on earth through physical perception. You will know that you worked for him in everything that you sought to become as a human being. Then you will recognize the full significance and power of the Christ, for you will recognize that you are not in a position by yourself to make any choice other than to follow Lucifer into his realm. Only because the Christ event, the Christ being, exists in human history, only this allows us to see that this Christ being did in fact enter earth evolution with gifts to bestow upon us. This is a fact that we will truly realize only then, during life on Jupiter, when we realize that it was the Christ being alone who enabled us not to walk the path with Lucifer, but rather to follow the path of cosmic evolution. For what does Lucifer want from us? What will he want from us then? He will say to us, quote, "This experience that you are having, this repetition of earth consciousness, is a very significant thing for you," close quote. For things will be different on Jupiter, entirely different. On Earth, when we reach our mid-30s, we continue to do the same thing in the second half of our lives that we did before. We eat and drink in order to preserve the physical organism. We do this after we turn 35, just like we did before we turned 35. Things will be entirely different on Jupiter. On Jupiter, you will not need to eat and drink in the same way that you do here on Earth, but you will be connected in a similar way to the processes of that physical body, in a body that now belongs fully to the Jupiter incarnation, just as you are connected to the processes of your own body here on Earth through food and drink. From the moment in which Earth consciousness is recalled onward, you will never be able to have the same relationship to your surroundings on Jupiter that you had before. If I may put it somewhat trivially, you will no longer bump up against it. I might be able to use this comparison. Were something similar to be the case on Earth when you turn 35, the conditions in your organs would change, so that you could no longer breathe the earth air or digest the sustenance that the earth provides. Think about what it would be like if, when we turned 35, we had to undergo a kind of development in our physical bodies that renders our organs unable to go through more years on earth. Something that made our physical body unable to bear anything that grows on the earth. This is how things will be, in a sense, on Jupiter. Of course, the conditions will be entirely different, but it will be the case that in the second half of our life on Jupiter, we will no longer be able to have direct physical contact with our surroundings. This will be a natural law on Jupiter. It will be an absolute natural law. Through the power of this natural law, Lucifer might possibly be able to lead our soul, which will still be very much alive, even though the body to which they are connected will no longer be able to sustain itself on Jupiter, were it not for the fact that Christ will be able to show us he has gathered treasures within us in the first half of our life on Jupiter, that will sustain us during the second half of our existence on Jupiter. On Jupiter, Christ will not only demonstrate his ethical character to the outer world, as we saw here on Earth, he will also be the inner nourishment of the second half of our life on Jupiter. And this sustenance will be simultaneously of moral significance. Only by gathering these sustaining treasures within us will Christ be able to free us from Lucifer. Were this not to occur, if Christ were not able to free us from Lucifer on Jupiter, then Lucifer would take our soul away with him. Our body, which will then be unable to have any connection with the physical world on Jupiter, will perish, will fall away from us. And Lucifer will show us, quote, "Look there, I am taking your soul, but your body is falling away from you into Ahriman's coffers. He will have them now. They will go on living with him." Close quote. Everything will depend on our soul's ability in that moment when Earth consciousness is recalled to look back and remember how it was filled with the mystery of Golgotha during its time on Earth. How it was filled with the understanding that the Christ entered into human development and the historical development of Earth evolution. Just think about the terrible circumstances of the human souls on Jupiter, who look back on this time and have to say to themselves, quote, "During my time on earth, I denied Christ. I did not want to know about Christ. I rejected the opportunity to learn at the proper moment about the Christ being who entered into earth evolution through the mystery of Golgotha. I cannot remember anything that happened on earth through the Christ." Close quote. If there are souls during the Jupiter phase of evolution in whom all memory of the Christ has been erased because they did not choose to fill themselves with understanding of the Christ event during their existence on earth, then a fearsome judgment day will come for them. Christ will not take them on to nurture and sustain them during the second half of their life on Jupiter, but instead will point the way with one hand to the place where Ahriman will take their physical remains, and with the other to the place where Lucifer will lead their soul away. And now, with the understanding that spiritual science can give us of the mystery of Golgotha, turn back to the symbol of Christ Jesus lying in the grave. If you do not see a purely physical symbol there, but rather connect it with everything that you can know about the mystery of Golgotha, and if you have also developed certain faculties that allow you to see what spiritual science speaks of, then this symbol of Jesus lying in the grave will appear to you before your soul's eye, EYE, as a vision of the future condition of the human being on Jupiter. In the old places of the initiates, the students had to seek, under the leadership of their initiates, what was called in the old mysteries, quote, "beholding the sun at midnight," close quote. Physically, we see the sun during the day. At midnight, initiates see the sun straight through the earth, even though the earth is physically opaque. Insofar as they could see the sun right through the earth, the sun was stripped of its physical existence. On the other hand, the secret of Christ, the Son's Spirit, had been written onto the existence of the Son, and the students of the ancient initiates prophesied the secret of the Christ, the Son's Spirit. It was a higher form of seeing the natural world, a kind of natural clairvoyance. The symbols of Easter can show us a process of becoming clairvoyant within the historical life of the human being on earth, a process of starting to see clearly that we have already made our pact with Lucifer and Ahriman, and that only Christ can release us from it. The meaning of seeing the sun at midnight for the students of the ancient initiates can gradually become the devotional reverence that the Christian feels toward the mystery of Good Friday and Easter Saturday. We have every reason to concentrate during these days on all that is connected with the inner sense of tragedy, on the quite proper sense of inner sorrow felt in the depths of the human being. We would never have been able to become free beings on earth if we had not entered into the relationship with Lucifer and Ahriman that I have described today. If we had not made it possible for ourselves to go the way of the paths of Lucifer and Ahriman. During these days, we can all call to mind the tragic element that lies in the depths of our being by saying to ourselves, quote, "My freedom would never have been possible if it were not also possible for me to follow Ahriman and Lucifer." Close quote. And we can call up this consciousness by beholding the symbol of Christ lying in the grave. Christ, who was able, through his actions, to undo what had to be done in the interest of human freedom. In these days that are dedicated to commemorating the burial of Christ, we may find a murmur in our souls, telling us that we are justified in feeling sorrow for humanity, that the human being is not only cause for rejoicing, but also a true and significant reason to mourn. There are, after all, many days throughout the year in which we can think more about what we have become because of the fact that earth evolution was not simply abandoned, and that Christ was resurrected into earthly existence. But during these days, we can pour forth everything that made the mystery of Golgotha necessary. Everything that might live in the human soul is a kind of cosmic sorrow. And if you have gained some feeling for what the human soul has been connected with through history, then these days are ones in which you can experience sorrow about human evolution. Actually, it would be much better to say that these days are ones in which you are permitted to experience sorrow about human evolution. And if this feeling is a living one, then the black decor that we select for the room during this period of time is justified. This is why I was so disturbed yesterday when I saw the red shining out from within the black. Red is the color that we may again encounter after these days of sorrow are past, the sorrow about this deep tragedy connected with the essence of the human being. It was in bad taste, from both a Christian and an artistic point of view, that red was hanging here yesterday. These things must also be learned. But once you have learned them, you will be able to feel how these external forms have a deep significance and are connected with what could be called the human soul's growing together with cosmic experiences. Is this not expressed through the very observance of Easter itself? The period of Easter is determined by cosmic events, the first Sunday after the full moon that follows the equinox. The signs that tell us when Easter occurs are up above in the heavens. A barbaric scientific perspective has been demanding in the last 2 years that Easter should fall on the same day every year. If this demand were to be realized, it would be a very clear indication of how much humanity is trying to distance itself from a truly spiritual life, one that cannot be developed unless people become aware that their soul does not live simply in the midst of everything that circulates on the earth. One could use the exchange of money as an external symbol for this act of circulation. For everything that is symbolized in this monetary exchange, it would be quite comfortable to have Easter occur on the same day every year, but for everything that flows into the human soul from the life of the cosmos, it would be fatal if this barbaric scientific perspective, which wants to fix the dates of Easter, were to succeed, since we would no longer look to the cosmos to determine when these days should fall. Such details allow us to see how humanity is sailing headlong into Ahrimanic materialism. We need more people who, through a commitment to spiritual science, become wise to all of this. Surely you are familiar with Michelangelo's powerful work in the Sistine Chapel, titled The Last Judgment, either with the original, which has deteriorated considerably, or with the reproductions in prints. When you really consider the composition of this work, which depicts the judgment of the world, what would you say that this image of the judgment of the world actually is, now that you have drawn closer to spiritual science? Earlier I said that anyone equipped with the full potential of spiritual science, who steps before the symbol of Christ lying in the grave on Good Friday and Easter Saturday, will see, if he or she has progressed to the point of truly being able to see such things, a vision of the Jupiter human being arise before the soul. If you have not yet come to the point where you can see such things, but have achieved a felt understanding of spiritual science, you will nevertheless be able to arrive at a thought that is just as correct as the vision, if on a different level. This thought is especially relevant for this epoch. Painters equipped with all of the visual art of the present will allow the symbol of the mystery of Golgotha to work upon them, and then seek to answer this question in their paintings. Quote, "What will appear before me when I begin with the symbol of Christ Jesus lying in the grave? Then cast my eye, EYE, toward the interior life, still holding on to everything that I gained through my consideration of this other symbol? What will appear before me? Christ appears to me in all of the majesty that he will one day have on Jupiter, binding Ahriman in the underworld with bands of light, so that he cannot reach humanity, and conquering Lucifer, so that he cannot mislead human souls down his path." Close quote. All of this is commensurate with what the human being can gain through spiritual science. Everything that can appear before the human soul in our time was, for earlier generations, which is to say, for us, in an earlier incarnation, clothed in the image of the Last Judgment, as Michelangelo painted it on the wall of the Sistine Chapel. This image is simply a prophetic forerunner. The true image is the one that I have just described to you. People who are taught only by a Christian feeling, and not by spiritual science, have seen only what can be understood through the mystery of Good Friday in the form of the Last Judgment as it was depicted in paintings. But we live in a time of transition, and the souls who are more advanced, even if they have not yet taken up spiritual science, can be the most conscious that we are living in a period of transition, a period about which we must say, quote, "Just as people once looked at the Last Supper as an expression of the Easter mystery, or rather of the mystery of Good Friday, human beings today have lost their understanding of this. But a new understanding must arise, one that is achieved through spiritual science, as it has been described today, as we celebrate the occasion of Christ's burial." Close quote. I have often spoken in this room about things that Hermann Grimm was able so beautifully to see. In his title, Life of Michelangelo, he spoke extensively about Michelangelo's Last Judgment in the Sistine Chapel. It was not, unlike other university-educated people, someone who tried to describe things, in quotes, objectively. And I say that in quotes. But rather, he was someone whose soul, sensibility, and feelings were present throughout the process of researching. Therefore, Hermann Grimm wrote the following words at the end of his section about the Last Judgment in his Life of Michelangelo. Quote, "It is difficult, if not impossible, to speak about such things." Close quote. He meant the things that are connected with what the Last Judgment depicts for the human soul. In Michelangelo's age, it was not yet difficult to speak about such things, particularly in painting. Michelangelo did, in fact, speak about them through paintings. And those who were initiated in the mysteries of religion were able to speak about them. It has become difficult through the passing of time. Quote, "It is difficult, if not impossible, to speak about such things. Our feelings about them lie in depths that the light cannot manage to penetrate. But we certainly would not presume to declare that the physical images given to us as holy bequests are merely shadows." Close quote. So he says that even in our current age, we should not presume to say that what Michelangelo thought of as real in the life of the human soul and depicted on the canvas is nothing but a fantasy. Deep and profound thinkers like Hermann Grimm do not presume to do so. Others, who are more like Ludwig Feuerbach or David Friedrich Strauss, are so bold as to say of Michelangelo's work that it is a heap of fantastic ideas, parenthesis, or, if they decide to say it more politely or in a more contemporary fashion, they say it is a fantasy, but they mean that it is a heap of fantastic ideas. Close parenthesis. Quote, "We certainly would not presume to declare that the physical images given to us as holy bequests are merely shadows. But as the course of spiritual evolution has shown me, these imaginations must become ever more prosaic, and other things must come to take their place as the symbols of eternity." Close quote. He sees that something else must take their place, but he seeks in vain for this replacement in the cultural periods that are within his grasp. And I would say that his ensuing words sound almost tragic. Quote, "For without symbols, whether they be visible images or thoughts, we cannot be settled. No matter how much we understand that all symbols are merely metaphors, empty for those who do not imbue them with content from their own souls. But since the Last Judgment stands on the wall of the Sistine Chapel, it is no longer a metaphor for us, but rather a monument of the fantastical soul life of a bygone period, and a foreign people whose thoughts are no longer ours." Close quote. This is the confession of a soul speaking in all sincerity to itself, just as a mind must confess to itself when it is unable to simply remain at a prior state of existence. Quote, "We can live now into the future, even if we have lost what the human soul saw and perceived in its consideration of the Good Friday mystery." Close quote. These are the words of a mind that senses that the old has passed, and that looks into the present. The words of a mind that seeks in vain for something that can replace the old. Such a mind as this, in old age, passes through the gate of death with these thoughts. Quote, where, O soul, O human soul, which once immersed itself in the holiest secrets of world evolution by looking upon Christ lying in the grave? Where, O human soul, will you find what your thoughts and feelings about these secrets must become? Where, O human soul, will you find something that fills you in the same way when you gaze upon Christ in the grave, when you behold this mystery of Good Friday? Where, O human soul, will you find this? Close quote. With such thoughts, a mind like Hermann Grimm's passes through the gate of death. Now you will understand the meaning of what I said a few days ago in this room. There are souls who pass through the gate of death and take hold of a feeling, a wholly new feeling, for what the human being truly is, just as our friend Christian Morgenstern did, with a consciousness illuminated by spiritual science, a clear consciousness of everything that had been lost to the human soul. filled with a consciousness of the new teachings of Christ, he carried new thoughts about the Christ events and their connection with human evolution through the gate of death into the spiritual worlds. The souls who longed for these thoughts, the ones who were able to carry only incomplete thoughts of mere pictorial images of a prior age on their own journey through the gate of death, found in our friend Christian Morgenstern a contemporary who was truly illuminating. Superficial people believe that the human being who has passed through that gate then gazes upon all of these secrets. This is not the case. For just as we are prepared through the embryonic period for our life outside of our mother's body, so too do we prepare for the life between death and a new birth during this life, in a body on earth. And for those souls who pass through the gate of death without having taken up any thoughts about the mystery of Golgotha during their time in an earthly body, the Revelator was the person who appeared and illuminated their soul with the full potential of the knowledge of the Christ. Let us fill ourselves reverently with such thoughts at this time of year. Let us take them up concretely as they appear before our souls in connection with this Anthroposophical Society. Let us take them up concretely and try to understand them ever more deeply during these days when the mysteries of Good Friday and Easter Saturday give us the power to do so. Let us make use of these holy and tragic days to allow ourselves to be moved by what this occasion can call up in our souls, the glowing depths of human existence as it has developed through its time on earth, but through the other heavenly bodies in which the earth shall be reincarnated. Let us attempt to allow Easter to be a sign, an image in the deepest sense, of all that connects the essence of the human soul, as well as our self-knowledge, with the eternal. The end of Lecture 11.